Yesterday, the NBA Finals, Game 2, Nuggets star Nikola Jokic was absolutely superb. 41 points. He really took the game over in the third quarter as well, where he had 18 in that quarter alone of his 41. But the Miami Heat, gee, they just scratch and claw this team, and they've got another win. They've come from 15 points down, in fact, yesterday, the Heat. And in the end, they leveled the series. 111-108, Denver missed a three right on the buzzer, which would have sent the game to OT, but 111-108, the Heat. That was Denver's first home playoff loss in these playoffs. They were 9-0 in their own building, but beaten yesterday. So it's 1-1 heading back to Miami, the eighth seed in the East. Big chance to cause what would be a boil over. In game three, Denver $1.70, slight favourites on the road with Tab. Miami $2.20 plus 2.5 at the line. So that is Thursday morning our time in Miami. Some other news in boxing. Aussie heavyweight Justice Hooney. I saw this tweet from Ben Damon of Main Event last night, friend of the show. Justice Hooney snapped an ankle ligament sparring on the weekend. And he was due to fly to the US today ahead of really his first big overseas bout Sunday week in New Orleans. So that's a massive blow for Justice Hooney. How about Swans defender Nick Blakey re-signing until 2031? Talk about security. A seven-year contract for Nick Blakey. Obviously an incisive runner and intercept marker. Really good player for the Swans. But 23 years of age, 89 games since his debut back in 2019. To sign a seven-year extension. You'd be pretty happy with that. The Swans coming off a bye, big game against St Kilda Thursday night. As we mentioned earlier this morning, Lance Franklin's 350th on Thursday night at the SCG. The Saints are fifth on the ladder. The Swans are 12th. There's two wins between them. So this is a crucial game for Sydney in the context of their season. And they are favourites with Tab at $1.67. St Kilda $2.20 plus 6.5, skinny line. Pretty tight market, that one. But you'd imagine, Loz, the Swans would have to be up for this. Buddy's 350th at home, Thursday night. Saints, big game. Blakey's re-sign. This is, I'm all over the Swans here. They'll be winning this.
Well, they're still playing for their season, aren't they? They can't afford to drop too many games. 350 games, massive achievement by Buddy. Well, they haven't been playing their best football, have they? You know, coming off the back of that smashing in last year's grand final, I think a lot of people had high hopes for the Swans. Now, whether they can improve enough between now and the end of the year to beat a side like Collingwood, who looks to be the standout at this stage of the year, that's debatable. But what we do know with the Swans is when they play their brand of football, they are extremely tough to beat. So hopefully they can get on a roll, you know, get into the finals, have their best team available, and who knows what they're capable of doing.
Well, everyone else has been chairman of selectors so far this morning. Maybe it's over to Denny Wilder for the next 10 minutes. How are you, Denny?
Morning, gents. I'm well. I'm still getting over that loss in Adelaide. It was hard to watch, to be honest. I've never seen Brad Fittler as angry as he was. He walked off the field by himself long before his players did on that night. They were left in a huddle where James Tedesco and Tyson Frizzell sort of laid down the law and said, sort of told them what they're going to be facing coming up in the next few days and next few weeks and the challenge ahead. But Freddie was just fuming. And, you know, the way that the Blues, you know, didn't aim up in the last 10 or so minutes was very hard to cop. Very hard to cop.
Mm. Yeah, it wasn't a great final sort of 12 minutes for New South Wales, but all the talk over the last 48 hours has been who's going to play in the halves for New South Wales, given that Nathan Cleary injured his hamstring the other night against the Dragons. What's the latest in what you're hearing, Denny?
Well, so, Laurie, I went and interviewed Freddie yesterday, and we ran it on the news last night, and Freddie was giving nothing away in terms of who his halfback's going to be. What I will say is, from watching that game, and I watched it live and I watched it again on replay, there were some people who were hammering Jerome Luai's performance and now want him out of the team. I thought the best player for New South Wales was Liam Martin. I thought Brian To'o wasn't too far behind him. And I thought that Jerome Luai was right up there as well. So I find it hard to cop the criticism of Luai. I know my opinion doesn't, you know, matter as much as former greats and all that sort of stuff, but I found it really hard to aware that he should be criticised for what he did. He was very solid, and I think he provided some of the spark that New South Wales needed. And I'd have him in somewhere in that side. I'd have him as my 5-8. And my concern about the mass changes that some people are wanting to make is that this preparation is going to be even shorter than other preparations. In because there's a game on, is it the King's birthday now? Is that what they call it? The Dogs are playing against Parramatta, and that means that the teams will be selected a day later, in effect, which means a day less preparation for the Blues, and that I think that impacts the ability to make huge changes. I think it's going to be quite a short camp. And I think you've got to take that into consideration. So, I mean, look, I'd imagine that the obvious option is Nico, isn't it, at halfback. In terms of someone who's been around the squad. But it is, I get it, it's a massive call for a virtual rookie to walk up to, walk into that stadium with the series on the line. And the Blues' backs very much against the wall. Last night I was on 100% footy, and I think Gal was saying Nico's the one. Gus said that he'd go with Mitchell Moses, which is an understandable choice given that when Nathan was out before, they went for Moses. He's got a great kicking game, an excellent passing game, and I guess he... he complements the style that Luai plays in a way, in that he can be an organiser and he can guide the team around. But I mean, personally, I don't know. I think I keep Luai, and I probably put Nico there. So,
Denny, what's Brad Fittler like? Is he gonna read and listen to the media? And their push and, everyone's opinion? Or is he the type of guy that he won't care what it looks like or feels like? He'll work out what his best 17 is, and then he'll just lay it on the line. And if they lose, they lose.
Papa, I thought it was interesting. I mean, you said in the lead-up to the last game, you felt the team was picked a little bit on popular opinion.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yep. Certainly one player particularly, yeah.
Was that Nico? Was it
Nico?
Or,
yeah, I just think I thought as the number 14, I didn't think that was the right selection at number 14. This situation is very different.
Look, I think in a lot of ways, you could be justified in your opinion, and Nico was the most shattered bloke in that Blues dressing room after the game. I was in that room, and generally the players were actually. Very good to deal with. They were, they aimed up, they talked to the media, and that's always not always an easy thing after a loss, in particular in the way they had it. Nico was just filthy with the world. And I think he only played that short stint. I think he was angry at himself for missing the tackle on Munster, and, I think he's been very hard on himself as well. So in terms of popular opinion or will Freddie listen? Well, when I talked to Freddie yesterday, he knows that everybody out there, like people like me or you, Pup, or the listeners, they've all got an opinion. They've also all got an opinion on whether he should be coach or not. And he brought that up. He knows that there are plenty of people now trying to push him aside or saying it's all over for him. So there's that. Additional pressure as well. Freddie will pick a team he thinks can win, and I don't think he gives a rats about what you know, my opinion is, what, you know, the general person's opinion. He'll pick a team that he knows is playing for his coaching future in a lot of ways. So, okay. I think that, yeah, he's strong enough and with Greg Alexander to make the right calls in their mind, and I don't think they'll be swayed by anyone else's opinion.
No. And nor should they. And they've got to pick a side that'll fight to the death. And
well, Laurie, you've been in this situation, right?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, yeah. And it's
you
not great.
Know, you know the pressure that Brandy and Freddie are under, and you know what they'd be feeling. Can you take us? Like, can you explain to me the mindset and also, I don't know,
People are always coming from the right place because they'll always offer up their opinion. But you've got to narrow your focus on what you actually think is going to be your best team. But the only advice I would have is you've got to go with the best team who's going to fight and scrap for you. The team that is going to, at the end of the day, just compete and give you everything. Not give you half of what they got, not give you three quarters of what they got, but you know that they're going to put it all on the line. And
players you trust.
I remember one bloke said to me one day, and I thought about it after he said it, and I thought, yeah, that's not a bad sort of theory. He said, mate, when you're going up there in that environment and you're playing, you got to pick a team that you'd leave them in charge of your kids if you needed protection.
So you're picking
kids.
On character more
well,
than girls.
Well, I just remember him saying that. Oh, well, that's not a bad way of looking at it, because you'd need to pick a tough side in Queensland because you're not going to get everything go your way. You're going to have the penalty count against you. You've got the crowd against you. You're not going to get any favours at all, but you need a tough footy team that can put aside distractions when things go bad. Just wipe it and just continue to march forward. Just continue to have a strong mentality. Whatever it takes, we get the job done. Whatever it takes, we move forward. And that's the team that you'd be looking to pick going up there to Queensland for game two. Because it's just a different game of football up there than anywhere else.
Laurie, we've been up there a stack of times. I've covered your teams up there. And it's just so hard to win. You can go in with the best team and the best attitude, and all of a sudden it's just they're roaring and they're scoring tries, and it becomes a party for Queensland. It's just so hard to overcome that, and that's why I guess you need the strongest mental characters, you know, the ones with the mental strength who won't fold, who won't bow to pressure,
won't buckle, you know. And again, you know, you're trying to pick 17 of them, and sometimes, you know, you haven't got that many, but you've got to go with what he thinks will do the job for him. And again, you know, looking back at, you know, certain periods of when I was in charge, I think I've made, yeah, not the, yeah, well, yeah, sometimes you're picking the wrong player for certain situations.
You get blinded by loyalty, I think.
Well, I think sometimes you do, but sometimes you get blinded by skill rather than resilience. In these type of games. And as I said to you before, going into Queensland, you need a strong side mentally and physically. Because up there, it's totally different.
One bloke who, when I spoke to Freddie yesterday, he was umming and ahhing about giving me too much info on injured players and whatever. But he said that he's talked to South and... he was saying that Latrell will play this week, and you know, obviously that's a strong indication that he's on his way back into the side. There have been other people saying he won't play, so I feel like it'll be great to see Latrell back on the field and back playing, and I think that's so important. I mean, when we broke the story last week that Latrell was out, that was just the body blow that New South Wales didn't need, wasn't it? I mean,
I'll tell you what, though, Denny. If Latrell doesn't play this weekend, the tough conversation then is around: can you pick both Latrell and Tommy, who will be underdone.
Yeah, well, they're massively underdone. I mean, again, you were talking about character, and you're talking about blokes who can do that job in the furnace, and I'd probably risk it. Definitely with Latrell, because he's that absolute X factor. He's a devastating player, and I think that he's a player who Queensland don't want to play against.
Most definitely.
And I know he hasn't played Origin that much recently from memory, but my strong memory of him is the way he physically dominated Queensland players. And I'm not just talking about lightweights. I'm talking about their big, tough men, you know. And he was the one who set the standard physically for New South Wales, I thought. And I think that's what they need. That's why they picked Tavita and other players in that first game. And not all of it went to exact plan. But I feel like I take a risk on Latrell, even if he's not playing this week.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think you take a risk on him, but you make sure that calf injury is close to being
perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. 150% right.
Let's talk some Dragons. Yep. And you wrote in your column about their coaching situation in the Sun Herald on the weekend, Denny.
Yeah, well, the story I was discussing in the column was that, you know, there's a push from some Dragons power brokers to try and sway Peter Doust's view of Shane Flanagan. Now, for whatever reason, Peter Doust is not a huge Shane Flanagan fan, and obviously Doust has got a lot of say on that board. And they have to be unanimous in decisions. But as the days go by, I feel like the Dragons, or in fact, I know the Dragons are nervous now about the idea of rookie coaches after what happened with Jason Riles. And I think that they're leaning, well, sections of that board are now leaning strongly towards experience. And when you look at the candidates, I feel like the one they're looking at most would be Flanagan. Look, there's always a chance there's going to be a left field option. As of yesterday, I checked with some well-placed sources of the Dragons, and they were saying the ones they're still talking to are Flanagan, Dean Young, who's got strong support from the St. George side of the board, and Ben Hornby, who a lot of people are saying he was completely out of the race because he shares the same manager as Jason Riles, and that's George Mimas, and the Dragons were not happy with the way things panned out with Riles virtually leaving them at the altar. And but they've said they've put that to one side now, and they will still be considering Hornby, but I feel like experience is where they're at.
Is Des still part of the conversation, or is he out of the room?
Yeah, I haven't heard that, Laurie. I mean, he could be, but I haven't heard that.
Yep.
And, well, I mean, I'd have him part of that conversation.
Most definitely. You're looking for an experienced coach.
Well, if you're looking for someone who will stand up to everybody at a club and say, this is how we're doing it, Des has definitely got the capability of doing that. I just haven't really heard his name mentioned strongly in dispatches. And look, I'm not saying that all the information I have on that in that situation is 100% correct, but all I can gather to the best of my ability is that there are three blokes at the moment who are strongly being considered.
Denny, where does all this uncertainty around the coach leave their best player, Ben Hunt?
There was plenty of talk yesterday. I don't know how it all started, but plenty of talk from clubs who are watching the Ben Hunt situation that the Gold Coast is suddenly right in the market. And late yesterday, I was getting information that the Titans were starting to, a couple of their halves were being told, the rival clubs are being told that they could you know, talk to them. So I don't know whether that means something or not, but yeah, there's some theory that Ben Hunt might want to go back to Queensland where he's from. I still think in the background, the Bulldogs, they've been interested for a while in Ben Hunt, or in a half in general, and Hunt fits the bill in a lot of ways, now that he's experienced, and he could guide a relatively young side around quite well. So, whether the Bulldogs are still the pick, I don't know, but I do think that, I think Ben Hunt's going to wait for Origin to get to be done and for a coach to be appointed before he makes any move. And don't forget, he's on contract, and the Dragons would have to let him go. They'd have to let him go. And Gus was staying on 100% footy last night. Ben Hunt's biggest issue is that he doesn't want to play hooker. He wants to be halfback. That the Dragons have the issue of Sullivan, who's a very good, Bud Sullivan is a very good young rising half at the club. So they've got a bit of a situation where, is he the future halfback, and do they give him a go there and put Hunt at hooker? Well, according to Gus, that is not going to wash with Ben Hunt.
Have to leave it there, Denny. Thanks so much.
Love talking to you guys. Thank you for having me on.
Welcome back to the Big Sports Breakfast. And the French Open continues this morning. We've seen more fourth round action. And in the men's, it was a marathon. Holger Rune beat his Argentine opponent, Cherundolo. And it got to the super tiebreak in the fifth set to decide it. 4 hours on court, 10-7. Holger Rune won that. So the sixth seed through to the last eight, as is the fourth seed, Casper Ruud, who won in straight sets. Coco Gauff won in straight sets on the women's side of the draw, as did Iga Swiatek. She got through, in fact, as her opponent Serenko of the Ukraine retired. Alex Zverev also threw on the men's side. He got through in straight sets against Grigor Dimitrov. And Alcaraz and Djokovic in action tonight/tomorrow morning. And those two, should they win, would meet in a semi-final. Give us a call, 1353 53. Send us a text, 0419 767 272. There was a text here earlier, Pup. I think you've already told us a couple of times, but one of our listeners, I've just lost it, wanting to ask, who would you go with, Neeza or Boland? You're going to preview the match against India tomorrow for us. But Neeza or Boland for this WTC final against India starting tomorrow night?
I would go Boland, buddy. I think he's earned the right to be first one picked. It's even if everyone was fully fit, if Josh Hazlewood was fit, it would be a really tough decision to leave Scotty Boland out. I think he's been exceptional with every chance he's got. I think his line and length in English conditions will be very important, not just for this game, the World Test Championship, but the entire Ashes series. He can bowl long spells, plenty of overs if the wickets is flat. Wickets are flat. And generally in the UK, when the pitches are good and you get that sunshine, you get more seam than you do swing. So it might only swing for a few overs, but then you can always get something out of the pitch there. So I think Scotty Boland won't let anyone down. It is disappointing not to have Josh fit. So we're at full strength, but in saying that, England have got plenty of problems leading into that Ashes series as well. India will definitely be a little bit underdone in regards to the longest format. They're all coming off playing IPL cricket, 20 over cricket in those conditions. So I think Australia are favourites and should be favourites to win this Test Championship. And it's obviously a huge game, a huge Test match, because not only is there a lot to play for, you'd love to win the Test Championship, but I think this is going to be so important leading into that first test against England. The likes of Warner, he's under pressure. He needs to make runs. He can have the greatest of plans to retire in Sydney against Pakistan, but he's two test matches away from his career being over, really, in my opinion. But if he walks out and can make some runs, then I think he will get that fairy tale finish.
Seriously, though, everyone wanting to drop David Warner, just remember who we got there waiting in the wings.
No, you got to give him a crack. You got to give 100%. Him first crack. He's got to, like, to me, he's got to play a minimum Test Championship, World Test Championship, and the first Test match. Assuming he gets four bats, I think he has to get that at least. And then even then, you're sort of thinking, let's see what the result is of both games as well. Because when you're winning, you can carry players further. When you're losing, as we're seeing now with New South Wales, there's speculation and talk about just about every player. So the Australian cricket team's no different. If they can be winning, you'll get away with a lot more.
I haven't seen the forecast for the weather over there in London, but Australia, I'm all over them at $2.
Against India?
Yeah.
We should be winning.
All
this.
Over them.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I found this is the card. So
India's got some injuries as well. They're quicks as well.
Yeah.
Missing some of their best
players. Still no Bumrah.
Exactly.
Massive blow for them. And they played, as we know, in the first WTC final, which was 2 years ago. That was at Southampton. So that we're still
similar COVID. Sort of wicket, though.
Very,
you know?
COVID-affected time, that. Yeah, similar. Yeah. Oh, would you say similar wicket? Is it the
is
Oval?
Is this test
probably
at the Oval? Yeah, I reckon pretty similar. No, I reckon Southampton and the Oval are probably the closest two pitches to what you get in Australia. Like, you've got a bit more pace and a bit more bounce than what you get at, you know, somewhere like a Headingley or a Lords, for example. Probably the least amount of sideways movement at those two venues, assuming the weather's pretty good. So, yeah, two very good places to play, certainly as an Australian, because you're comfortable in those conditions.
You played at Hampshire, didn't you?
I played a season at Hampshire, yes. Mm. Yep.
Memories? What's Southampton like, pup?
Amazing. Great part of the world. Mm. Pretty quiet. Apparently just about an hour cruise back into London. Great people. Amazing experience.
Find some nice venues. You with Warnie down there?
I tried to stick in his pocket. SK Warn, the king.
Run a
looked
few
after
short
me.
Balls off him.
Ran a few short balls. Mm. He threw a few dummies.
You didn't have to be a smart tactician to work that out, did you?
No.
Who you hung with.
Just like on hang tours. With... Hang with the king.
Yeah.
You do all right. You learn a few tricks.
So that first World Test Championship final 2 years ago, Chicken Chow's favourite player, Kyle Jemison, was man of the match. Mm. India made 217, New Zealand 249 in response. Then India 170 and New Zealand made 2 for 140 to win by 8 wickets. But Jemison 5 for 31. It certainly was a bowler's game by the looks of it. Mohammad Shami, who we'll probably see tomorrow night, Bumrah was in that team as well. Bolton Southee as well, very prominent as well for New Zealand. So, yeah, you would think just looking at that card alone, and you're saying this pitch is like the Oval, I'm with you, Loz.
Oh,
get
mate.
On the $2. We should be winning this.
Yeah.
I think we'll win in 4 days. I don't think this will be going 5 days.
Mm.
I can see this.
Can't disagree with you there, Loz.
India's
greatest strength, and has been for a long time, are their two spinners. In their own backyard, Ashwin and Jadeja are nearly unplayable, certainly in the second innings. Where you come over and play in England, I'd be surprised if they pick two spinners. So straight away, it takes...
Ashwin, do they?
I think they go with Ashwin as their first spinner, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. It's just conditions are so different to... you know, to what they are accustomed to having so much success in. So, yeah, going to be interesting, though. Interesting to see what 11 both teams go with.
Gosh, it's the main story on BBC Sport at the moment. Celtic boss Ange Postecoglou has agreed to become Tottenham's new manager on a 2-year contract. Incredible story for Australian football. It's just all set to be confirmed that Ange, who started in South Melbourne as a manager back in the late 90s, the old A-League,
NSL.
NSL, sorry. And here he is on the verge of managing a big club.
Just on that then, what speculate around salary. What would a salary be for a manager?
I have no idea, Loz.
So what would the big names get?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, some of our listeners
do they get on
£5-10 million
pound?
Yep.
Yes.
The big fish do. Yep.
Yeah.
Managers.
Someone,
not sure.
Talking about someone $8 million. I can't remember who it was the other day. I saw he was on $8 million a year.
Pound.
He was, might have even been US, might have been a coach over in the States.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Massive money, isn't it? Well done to him. Well, if he's commanding that type of figure. It's a
Ange
great...
mightn't get that straight. No, though,
okay,
but,
I found a comparison. Eric Ten Hag.
Yeah.
I found an article in The Sun from about a year ago.
So you get 2 million.
£9 million a year.
Per year.
Yeah, so that's Ange the Manchester United manager.
So you think, Ange, you'd have to say half that? Four and a half? Four?
Give him five.
Yeah. Pound as well, don't forget.
Yeah.
Just a couple of years there. And
Clark, you might have some new neighbours in a few years. Oh. You and J-Mac. You, J-Mac and Ange.
The more you earn, boys, the more you spend. That's what I can tell you.
Got to pay tax on that too.
And halve it. 49 cents in this country. Not so over there though, Loz.
You thought about Monaco, pup? All the tax breaks?
Thought about Dubai when I was playing. Resident of Dubai, tax-free. Got to spend a certain amount of days out of the country. We were doing it. 10 months a year we're travelling. But no, look, I think I dislike the tax man as much as anybody in the world. But to me, we're very lucky. I reckon we live in the greatest country in the world. If you're going to spend tax somewhere, it's worth it here with everything we have. As expensive as life is here in Australia, and I think it's too expensive, to be honest, but as expensive as it is, we are blessed in this country. There's not too much we don't have.
True, true. Just seeing some reports over in the States as well that Kyrie Irving is trying to recruit LeBron James to Dallas, to the Mavericks, to join him and obviously Luka Doncic as well. Disgusting.
Yeah. Ooh, seriously. Do you reckon he'll go?
No, I don't think LeBron would leave LA because I think LA for him now is more than about playing
for
the Lakers.
Post-basketball as well, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting to hear about his son, that story around that, how much he wants to play with his son, but his son mightn't feel the same.
Yep.
That's interesting.
Mm. Gosh, who'd want to play with Kyrie Irving? Ugh. Anyway, that'll be a big story to follow.
Who wouldn't want to play with LeBron?
Yeah, well, exactly.
Mate, if I was his young fella, I'd be, definitely, Dad. Look after me.
We mentioned it earlier this morning, but for our Queensland fans, you've got to replace Tommy Gilbert and Jai Arrow. And, you'd think Christian Welch, 18th man in game one, he'd be a walk-up start. So who do you want out of Nenai, Corey Horsburgh, the big red?
I'm conflicted here.
Felice Kaufusi's available.
Yeah. I'm conflicted.
The people's champion. Yeah. Well, everyone wants the red dog.
Well, I want the red dog, but and he's a Raider.
Mm. So, I wonder who the public are going to love more, though. If you've got the red dog and then you've got Nico, mate, it's going to cause chaos.
I know. Two of the most popular players in the game.
Yeah.
I don't know which way they'll go.
Think big red. Suncorp debut.
Oh, big red.
Series to win.
He'll love it, the red dog. He'll go hard, mate. He will be an animal.
His eyes will be spinning in the back of his head.
Yeah.
That's a risky run, though. I don't know. Well, Billy, every decision he's made so far in his coaching career has been wonderful. I don't know. I just got a feeling he'll probably go either with the experience of Kaufusi. But then again, he might think, oh, well, he hasn't played enough football. And Jeremiah Nenai has played, coming back into his second game. Depending on what he does this weekend, he might go, well, I'll give the young bloke a go because he played so well for us last year. Or he might just gamble and go big red.
Nah, I reckon he's loyalty to Kaufusi.
We need a red dog in Origin.
I'd love a red dog. I'd love to see the dog out there. The dog can play for us. We'll take him. We'll find us. He can wear number 7 for us, the red dog.
He can play anywhere. We'll just put him in.
Yeah.
Put him in. Away we go.
Can he kick?
It'll add great theatre.
He'll try.
I'm sure he kicked in a game not too long ago. Just on salaries of managers, a few of our listeners right onto this. Guardiola, Pep at Man City, 20 mil. Klopp, 15 mil. But are you talking, you're saying mil, are you talking, I'm assuming you're saying pounds, Mitch from Toronto. And if Klopp's on 15 million pounds, but he's won, Premier Leagues and Champions Leagues.
Yeah, he's not going to go to that, is he, Ange? But he's going to get a decent whack.
Well, you'd think 5 would be around right, I reckon. 5 million pounds to start off with. Lots of incentives, no doubt, built in.
Enough. Put it that way.
Also, Jess from Liverpool writes, I was just wondering if anyone has heard from all these people that said Ange couldn't coach. Football Federation Australia didn't want him, remember? They also did the same to Arnie. It shows that a few years ago, of course, they re-signed him after the World Cup. It shows that the people running the sport and even commentating on the game don't really have an idea, and we need to support the people that succeed in this country, not bring them down. Good on Ange.
Go Jess.
Jess from Liverpool.
Love it.
A friend of yours, obviously.
Maybe.
From the home
number
front.
Number one, Leach Street. Yep. Go Jess. I'm hearing you. Support our success. Forget the tall poppy syndrome and bring people down. Cheer Ange on.
And Chicken Chow says they just made a statue of Kyle Jemison in Rotorua. What a human.
He hasn't been heard from since.
What's happened
with Kyle? He made that one big statement against India, and then
he's had stress fractures. He'll be back.
Chicken Chow's got him locked up in his garage.
We'll be back.
He can live off one game. One game.
His apprentice Tyler to Chicken Chow.
Chicken Chow's favourite.
Barrier Droke for the Stradbroke. Queensland's race later today. Steve Hewlett, it's a big day. Morning to you.
It certainly is, yeah. 5 o'clock, not far from where we're broadcasting, actually in King George Square. So the public are welcome to go along. 5 o'clock sharp. However, the field, Nathan Burke from Racing Queensland, the chief handicapper, 9:30 he'll be with us. So what are we talking about? 37 minutes to be precise. Or thereabouts, he'll be with us and announce the final Stradbroke field. There's been so many people guessing, will this horse get in, won't it get in, and so on. So we'll have the final field in just over a half an hour up here on Racing HQ. And what about Singapore? What a shock to everybody. So we've got two of the leading participants there in Donna Logan and Dan Wheeler. And Dan's got some very big news in relation to Queensland racing as well when he joins us this morning. Okay. On Racing HQ.
Okay, great stuff. Big show coming up. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Steve. On Radio Tab coming up. And for those who want to go to the Barrier Draw, as Steve mentioned, King George Square there in the CBD in Brisbane later this afternoon. Dave Stanley is back in the house. I'm sure I saw him from a distance.
Yeah,
he did.
In the central commentary position.
Great
good
to
morning,
be here,
mate.
Boys. How are we? How are we on this Tuesday?
Very good, Dave. You've got a spring in your step. I saw Dave out there and I asked him, when does he go? Next week?
Yeah, counting down.
Geez, I wish I was going with you.
Heading over to the Europe, mate. I'm looking forward to Royal Ascot, boys. I know I've got to go over there for a wedding. I've got to be excited about that. But I'm very, very excited to get to Royal Ascot for the Platinum Jubilee Day, where Artorias is the favourite with the tab. I think he's around 450, Middo. In that market, I keep checking it. 450, Artorias. J-Mac will be there. And obviously, Sam Freeman, who we spoke to. We're going to chat with Henry Field this morning from Newgate, because not only have we got that to look forward to in a couple of weeks' time, we've also got a number of their horses, the Newgate and China Horse Club horses, racing over the weekend. And also, they've got the favourite in the J.J. Atkins Tannhauser. So we'll discuss with Henry how all of their horses are tracking towards the weekend. Have you boys ever been to Royal Ascot?
2017.
Never.
Never been.
No,
what
never.
Was 2017, was that wasn't Black Caviar, was it?
No. Black Caviar was 2012. Yeah. 2012.
What was it like, Middo? What for a couple of blokes that are
ball.
Yeah.
It is it's just great people watching more than anything.
People watching.
I remember it was actually 33 degrees in London that day. Try wearing one of those suits and a hat in that heat. It was really hot. But it was, sensational day. It's interesting going to the races over there, though, as opposed to here. And obviously you compare, it's less of the, the hardcore wagering element than what we have here. Obviously there's places to put bets on.
So it's just more of a day out.
Oh, exactly. It's more of
an event.
Yeah, an event, I suppose.
I think I told you, blokes. My mate had a horse running over there.
As in this year?
No, a couple of years ago, and just got beaten.
Fair dinkum.
Yeah. What's it called? Corvo's horse.
Was it a sprinter?
Yes. Star Witness.
Star Witness.
Star Witness. He said it was unbelievable. The atmosphere.
That's a while ago.
It would have been, 8 years ago, something like that?
Yeah, that was
they
Danny
went over there.
Was that Danny
yeah,
O'Brien?
Danny O'Brien, yep.
Yeah.
Blue
and
Diamond
did
winner.
Nick Hall, did Nick Hall ride Star Witness?
You might be right. I reckon we're going back 20. Going back a while.
He's reminiscing.
He
2011.
Said he said he's never been more deflated, though, after it lost.
Ran second in the King's Stand.
Yeah.
And then ran third in the Jubilee.
On Saturday.
Yeah.
Well, he's out. They've got something out.
Well, he did. But he goes, mate, when you're going over there, you're going over there to win. And
exactly.
They thought they could win. And then when they got rolled, he said it was very,
well, we've
very
ordered, we've ordered
Stephen Arnold wrote it.
Stephen Arnold.
We've ordered the top hat and tails, boys. So I don't know what the big fella is going to look like in the top hat and tails. But we've done the hire. And away we go, and we'll be there. I can't wait. So, it's going to be a good couple of weeks. By the way, Anthony...
I'll tell you now, the best part, Dave, is at the end of the day,
after
someone
told me this,
race,
the music.
Out the back, and they have a band, and the whole crowd goes out the back and just sings songs for a good 90 minutes after the last. It is awesome. Sounds ridiculous. It's not. It is so, so good.
Yeah.
And best part of the day.
When you say people watching, is it a bit of an aviary, is it?
look, how do I describe it? No, everyone... You will see. Absolute,
you
report back.
Back. Okay, I like it. Mm. How are you, pup? You there?
I'm well, buddy. Thank you.
Have you been to Royal Ascot, mate?
I've never been, no.
What about in London? I've got a couple of nights in London with Marlo. Any advice on any places to go?
Take your pick. I think London is, in regards to nightlife, there in New York, probably the best two in the world.
Jeez.
I love London.
Is it, Soho, or what's the place
to? Mate, anywhere in London, and I think the pub vibe is the best in the world. If you've got a good summer in England, they're drinking out the front of the pubs, they're always packed, every day of the week, just, it's a really nice feeling.
I like it. All right, well, we're pumped to be there. We might report in a few times, boys.
Hey, have you spoken to Marlo this morning?
Not this morning.
He'd
He's been
a little
on the
bit
text.
Sad, wouldn't he, about Singapore?
Mate, I think he is. He's pretty flat. Yeah. He was flat last night. He was sort of saying that, though, when he left Singapore, there was obviously, they've got the big casino over there.
Yeah,
the casino is how the government obviously generates a lot of their money from gambling, and they need the land. They want that Cranji land to obviously build and whatnot. So the saddest thing about it, though, is as we saw on social media last night, there's a lot of good people that are up there working, a lot of good horse flesh up there. So hopefully all those horses find a home. But I mean, we just hear then with Steve Hewlett, who'll be on Radio Tab, about he's got Dan Maher on the program, and big news. I think we'll see a lot of those people either come back to Australia or go elsewhere. They won't be lost to racing. I mean, we know how good Donna Logan is as a trainer. She's a Group 1 winning trainer, obviously, here in this country and has had good success up there. Plus, you've got all those Tiako horses as well. So don't be surprised if we see a lot of good people back in Aussie racing or elsewhere in the world. But, it is sad that it has gone that way. Boys, just quickly on my show today, as I said, Henry Field, Richard Callender. Now, Luke Pepper, we're going to chat to. Win, lose or draw with Opal Ridge. Getting in the Stradbroke. He's still got a filly that's absolutely airborne, and gee, she looks good on the social media up there. Graham Begg will join us, and then we'll chat with Michael Maxworthy. Of course, Maxie was up there calling for a number of years working in Singapore, so I'll ask him about his Singapore memories and also his thoughts on the final field for the Stradbroke boys. So go and enjoy your Tuesday.
Good on you, Dave.
All right, boys. See you, champion.